KPBS Roundtable offers perspectives from those telling San Diego stories. Join us for weekly conversations with reporters and storytellers, adding depth and context to the headlines driving the news in the San Diego region. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Thursday, June 25th. Some of San Diego's youngest students will have less access to screens next year. More on that next, but first, the headlines. An effort to increase transparency around lobbying San Diego City Council members is moving forward. The Council's Rules Committee voted unanimously to have city staff draft the proposed ordinance. The ordinance would ban campaign contributions from all registered lobbyists and would require written disclosure reports for any person or group spending more than $1,000 to influence a local decision. The limit is currently $5,000. A report recently found that San Diego splitting from SDG&E could be, quote, feasible, but it would come at a steep initial cost. The report, which was presented to the City Council, found that if San Diego switches over to a publicly owned power utility, it could save ratepayers roughly $7 billion across 30 years. The transition, however, has an estimated cost of $1 billion in upfront costs and an estimated $8 billion to make the switch happen. The report says the transition could take anywhere from 10 to 15 years to complete. On Tuesday night, the 2026 NBA draft took place and history was made. With the 21st pick in the draft, 19-year-old Kareem Lopez became the first Mexican-born first-round pick in the history of the NBA. Lopez was overcome with emotions from being drafted, calling it super special. While fighting back tears, Kareem thanked his mother, who sat alongside him, for her constant support along the way. Lopez's love for his country was evident, as the interior lining of his draft suit featured Mexico's flag and other homages to Mexican culture and his faith. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Most stories do not start with a journalist. They start with people. Noticing when a river runs dry, asking why a school is changing, discovering something new next door. Curiosity is human. Your right to keep asking questions is at the heart of NPR's mission, and we are not going anywhere.
San Diego's youngest students will have less access to screens in school next year. The San Diego Unified School Board approved a resolution this week, kicking off a review of classroom technology use. Education reporter Katie Anastas says parents are still pushing for tighter restrictions.
This fall, students will no longer have access to YouTube or gaming platforms on their school laptops. Students in transitional kindergarten won't have Chromebooks in their classrooms. The district also plans to create grade-level guidelines and time limits for using laptops. The move comes after months of advocacy by local parents.
It is a great first step towards future measured reform.
Erin Payne with Schools Beyond Screens says they'll keep pushing for
age-appropriate reform for middle and high school students who also suffer from excessive screen time, just as our youngest kiddos do. A real moratorium on all student-facing generative AI. And public disclosure of technology investments, because this is a public taxpayer-funded institution, after all.
District leaders plan to set time limits for laptops by winter break. The district's technology teams say they'll give an update to the board in January. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
An initiative to help San Diegans at risk of losing food assistance is going to a vote before the County Board of Supervisors today. The county says over 93,000 local residents could have their CalFresh benefits reduced or eliminated in the next year. Reporter Jacob Ayer tells us about the proposed county initiative.
As of June 1st, many who receive food benefits now have to prove they've satisfied new federal work requirements. The county says this could lead to thousands of local residents having their food benefits reduced or eliminated. In response, Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp is proposing the Safety Net Bridge program. It would use $1 million in the county's upcoming yearly budget to add food distribution events at 6 sites.
Working alongside Feeding San Diego and the San Diego Food Bank, we will bring food directly into communities expected to be hit hardest by HR1. We'll follow the data and adjust as needed to make sure resources are reaching the people who need them most.
If approved, the additional events will be held at library branches, community centers, and family resource centers. The proposed sites are in El Cajon, Chula Vista, Oceanside, Kearny Mesa, and 2 locations in Spring Valley. Jacob Ayer, KPBS News.
Tijuana residents may have to ration water this summer. A water supply crisis is pushing city leaders to look into recycling sewage for drinking. Environment reporter Tammy Murga says this week they visited Oceanside to learn about a drought-proof solution.
This week, some residents in Tijuana had their water cut off. It's become a common occurrence. Tijuana Councilmember Gina Arana says that's because pipes break repeatedly. She says the city is running out of water, and the Colorado River, the city's main water source, is drying up. Arana says recycling wastewater is one way to fix the problem. To learn from a city already doing that, they visited Oceanside's pure water facility. Rudy Guzman gave them a tour.
What if you take this wastewater, right, and you clean it enough so you can drink it? Crazy idea, right? But we did it.
Esther Sanchez is Oceanside's mayor. She says the new water source has reduced the city's reliance on the Colorado River. She believes the solution will work in Tijuana as it has for her city.
The only way to get there is through sharing information and having this ongoing dialogue.
Tijuana officials say they plan to meet with other cities in the region and Mexico that are investing in water recycling. Tammy Murga, KPBS News.
Dozens of immigrants have described health concerns or a lack of adequate medical care at the ICE Detention Center in San Diego. That's according to an investigation from our nonprofit partner, iNewsSource. Reporter Sophia Mejias-Pasco has the story.
During President Donald Trump's second term, calls for emergency medical care to the Otay Mesa Detention Center happen about 2 to 3 times a week.
Tell me exactly what's happening.
We have a detainee here that is constantly seizing and does not stop.
A month later, another call from Otay Mesa staff to 911.
What's wrong with the patient?
I have a pregnant female with abdominal pains.
And more recently...
What's the chief complaint?
She had a miscarriage.
The calls provide a rare window into a facility that has received a growing number of complaints as the president tries to bring mass deportations to San Diego. One 24-year-old from Norway who spent 9 days at Otay Mesa said she feared for her life.
I knew it was possible that I wouldn't make it out.
That's Hannah Engon. She came to the U.S. on a student visa in 2022. She met Joshua DeGuman while playing volleyball. He's a U.S. citizen and now her husband. At an appointment in November for Engon's green card application, everything at first went fine. Then ICE agents arrested her. Here's the husband.
My first thought was, where is she going and how do I stop it?
Engon has type 1 diabetes. She needs insulin to manage her blood sugar level, and without it, she could die. But inside Otay Mesa, Engon said she had to beg medical staff to give her insulin. When they did, it wasn't at the right time, she said. One morning, after breakfast...
I start feeling very, very, very sick. I'm nauseous. My vision is blurry. I can barely stand up. Like, I fall down when I try to get up. Multiple times, like I black out.
When she was seen by medical staff that day, she said her blood sugar had spiked far above what doctors say is safe. William Weber is a doctor in Minneapolis with the Medical Justice Alliance, which advocates for improved health care in detention settings.
It feels like a handbook of like what not to do with a type 1 diabetic.
At another point, Engon said she was moved to a single cell in the medical department to receive treatment. She called it solitary confinement.
For 2 hours, I'm trying to bang on the door and ask for help, and it's just very stressful. I just felt ignored and unsafe.
CoreCivic, the private prison company that manages Otay Mesa, said it does not use solitary confinement. It does use medical housing units when, quote, closer medical observation is warranted. Engon said she was held in one such unit for 5 days, at times confined for stretches lasting more than 24 hours. Her meals arrived through a slot in the door. She was allowed one shower during that time. And while her treatment improved there, it came at a cost.
Because I was already, losing my mind.
In court records, iNewsSource has identified dozens of immigrants who have mentioned health concerns or inadequate care at the detention center. One man said he had a heart attack while detained and feared he would die in custody. One woman said she was given the wrong medication by staff. Catherine McKenzie is a professor at the Yale School of Medicine and director of its Center for Asylum Medicine. She said people with serious conditions like Engon's are generally harder to treat inside detention centers.
They are just not well equipped to care for people who are chronically ill or acutely ill.
Spokespeople for the Department of Homeland Security declined multiple requests for an interview with iNewsSource. Same for CoreCivic. In a statement, an ICE spokesperson said that medical care in its detention centers is the best that many immigrants have received in their entire lives. A spokesperson for CoreCivic said they take seriously their responsibility to care for patients and that medical, mental health, and emergency services are available to detainees. The spokesperson added that diabetics like Engon are given blood sugar tests and insulin when indicated, but did not respond to specific allegations about her care. For KPBS, I'm iNewsSource reporter Sophia Mejias-Pasco.
Jake Kincaid contributed to this report. iNewsSource is an independently funded nonprofit partner of KPBS. Next Wednesday is the start of the new fiscal year in San Diego, and changes are coming to the city's park and recreation centers. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen joined anchor Debbie Cruz to recap how the new budget will impact city services.
Andrew, what might city residents notice after July 1st?
So some recreation centers will see their hours reduced. Other rec centers will actually have the same hours, and the city uses a pretty complex data based on neighborhood demographics or utilization rates of those rec centers to determine, you know, which ones have the remaining hours and which ones will be reduced, and how to make those decisions equitably. It's summer now, and most kids are out of school, so these rec centers give those kids something to do. They're really important social infrastructure. There's art classes, sports, dance. There's programming for seniors. And so, while this programming isn't going away entirely, it is being significantly reduced in some areas. And just to be clear, nobody likes this. The city does, is legally required to balance its budget. It cannot spend more money than it takes in a given year. And this deficit that the city was facing has been building for many years. It's an unhappy situation for everyone.
How do these budget cuts translate to actual jobs in the city's Parks and Rec Department?
So the Parks and Rec Department is actually losing more positions than any other department at the city. The original budget proposal that was released by the mayor in May had about 90 positions cut from Parks and Rec. That eventually got whittled down to a little over 50 positions. The largest number of those positions that are going to be gone or unfunded in the budget are the people, the staff who run the rec center programming. In addition, however, there are also positions related to turf maintenance, tree maintenance at parks, public bathroom maintenance, and park rangers. So you might notice not just impacts to, rec center programming, but also just how nice and how well-maintained the parks are. Some of these positions that are being unfunded in the budget to balance the budget are actually vacant currently. And so the funding is gone from the department, but no one is actually being laid off in those cases. Other positions are filled, and those employees might be laid off. They might also be able to move into another vacant position at the city if they are qualified for that position.
And there was also a big debate over arts funding in the city budget. Remind us what happened there.
Yeah, Mayor Todd Gloria's first draft budget released in April totally eliminated all grant funding for the city's arts and culture organizations. That totaled about $12 million. And so it represents about 0.5% of the city's total general fund spending, not a huge amount, when you think of how big the city's budget is. Shortly before the city council budget vote, two council members announced a deal. And what they had proposed was keeping $6 million in grant funding for the arts coming from the city budget And the County of San Diego and the Prebys Foundation each pledged $3 million in matching funds. It was conditioned on the city approving that $6 million. Each of these other entities would put in another $3 million, and that would take us back to the $12 million in arts funding that should be available to those organizations in the coming 12 months.
So how did the city council find this additional funding for arts in the budget?
It actually has to do with the San Diego Convention Center. So the city is still paying off bonds that it issued more than 20 years ago to expand the convention center. And it has a payment due on that debt in the coming fiscal year of about $12 million. So instead of making that payment on that debt from the city's general fund, the city council decided to make it from the pot of money that is being raised by Measure C. Now, Measure C was a ballot measure in 2020. It raised the city's hotel tax. And, Measure C was intended to fund another convention center expansion in addition to road repair and homelessness. At least these were the issues that were sold to voters as reasons to vote for it. So this decision to divert some of the money from Measure C to pre-existing debt rather than, saving money for a future expansion of the convention center. It is allowed. It's legal. There's no question about that. But the mayor says that it is unsustainable in the long term. And that's because the convention center has many capital needs. It has a lot of maintenance needs. And, this money for Measure C can't be just continuously used as this little budget trick to maintain arts funding. So what this really means is arts organizations are just going to have to keep on fighting to defend their funding in the city budget even next year.
That was Metro reporter Andrew Bowen speaking with anchor Debbie Cruz. That's it for the podcast today. This podcast is edited by Brooke Ruth and hosted and produced by me, Lawrence K. Jackson. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Thanks for listening and have a great day. Watch programs on your schedule with the KPBS Plus streaming service. See new episodes of Nature and Nova, latest news from PBS NewsHour and KPBS Evening Edition, local shows like Ken Kramer's About San Diego. Learn more at kpbs.org/kpbsplus.